I thought Governor Brainard did a great job articulating where we are. You know, in March when I dissented, I felt like it was still a free lunch. We were coming up short on our inflation target, and to me it was clear that there were still signs of slack in the labor market. Whether there's still slack in the labor market is now less clear than it was in March. At the same time, inflation has gone the wrong direction. Core inflation has gone the wrong direction. So I don't know if we are there yet. And the fact that inflation is coming up short and there's no signs of pressure, real pressure on wages, suggests to me there may still be slack. But this is the question that we're all wrestling with, and I'm looking forward to getting more data between now and the next FOMC meeting.
So does that mean you would consider dissenting again?
I mean, I don't make up my mind until the meeting on what I'm actually going to do. And so anything is on the table depending on how the data comes out.
But do you feel like we're close? So we are definitely closer now.
Well, we have to be closer. Okay. We know that. We are closer, but we don't know, you know, we don't know how far the shore is. We know we're moving towards shore, but we still don't know how far the shore is away from us. And the big uncertainty that people talk about is this risk of some nonlinearity in the inflation process as the unemployment rate drops. But, you know, with our 2% being a target rather than a ceiling, it seems like the risk that we have is low. Because if we were to go over our 2% target, we've been under for 6 or 7 years. If we went over for a short period of time, it doesn't strike me why that should be all that concerning.
So is the idea that you shouldn't move until you hit that 2%, until you exceed that 2%?
Not necessarily. But again, we're not right now. Inflation is going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And so that is concerning to me. If we were seeing inflation on a steady path towards our 2% target, that would give me more confidence that we are, in fact, approaching maximum employment. But we're getting these odd signals of the unemployment rate coming down, but core inflation also coming down.
So does that, I mean, would you rather then at this point sort of just, you know, sit back, wait for the data, take a pause, that kind of thing? Is that?
Well, in general, I'm waiting for the data to come in and give guidance on what our next move should be.
Mm-hmm. What about growth? Is 3% growth for the next however many years sort of a reasonable thing to expect from this economy, given what you've said about demographics? And
it's very hard to see us achieving 3% growth given where population growth is right now, both in terms of fertility and in terms of immigration, unless something were to change there, or unless we had some kind of a positive productivity shock where all of a sudden we got surprised, which would be great, but there's nothing that we're looking at right now that indicates that that's around the corner.
Tax cuts doesn't make positive productivity shock?
I could see tax reform. If it was actually reducing loopholes and deductions and making the tax code more efficient and reducing distortions in the tax code, that could be, over time, enhancing the productivity. Mm-hmm. But I don't see how just tax cuts, deficit finance tax cuts, leads to a productivity improvement. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What about making all those trade agreements a little bit smoother and more bilateral and this kind of thing? Is that in the right direction of either, I guess productivity would be the way that might affect.
It isn't obvious to me that would affect productivity. It seems to me that would affect more distributional outcomes for workers within the U.S. economy. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, for the last few decades, I feel like we've taken the posture of unilateral free trade, even though not all every other country would reciprocate that. But if you asked, well, why should we do that, the answer was always, well, if we don't do that, we're going to be in a trade war. And I think that's a false choice. And so I do think that the country is now asking, are there fairer free trade or fairer trade agreements that we could enter into that are neither unilateral free trade nor trade war that would make more sense for American workers? I think that that's very fair. I don't know that that necessarily leads to enhanced productivity, mm-hmm. but it may lead to more politically palatable distributional outcomes within our economy.
Mm-hmm. And growth?
It isn't obvious to me what the net effect would be on growth.
There was some talk in the last statement about the balance sheet, getting that moving by the end of the year. Were you on board with that with your colleagues?
I've said, as I said in March, that I want us to put out a detailed plan for how the most important thing to me is that we put out a detailed plan on how exactly and when we're going to start to normalize the balance sheet to give the markets as much advance notice as possible, just so that there are no surprises. That, to me, is the best thing that we could do. So I'm encouraging my colleagues that we should do something public soon, again, just to take the uncertainty away, and then put that, let that go on in the background, and then people can bring their focus back to the Fed funds rate while the balance sheet normalization proceeds.
And so the details on that have pretty much been ironed out, I take it?
We'll have to wait and see.
The last time that you sort of gave your thoughts on this at length, you kind of said you want to see that plan first, wait, then do more rate hikes. Would it be acceptable to you, given what's going on with unemployment, to have them be at the same time?
I need to see the data. Again, I haven't reached any conclusions about that. But again, I look at, in my thinking of this, when we announce whatever we're going to do in the balance sheet, I expect that could lead to some tightening of monetary conditions, just the announcement itself. So in a sense, that announcement, in advance of actual implementation, the announcement itself is an alternative to a rate hike. But we don't know how big a rate hike that is equivalent to. Maybe it's a few basis points. So because we don't know that, I would like to get that out there, see what the market response is, see what effect it has on monetary conditions, and then we can assess, is further tightening warranted?
So that would be, you'd be okay, it sounds as though you're a little hesitant about a tightening on the Fed funds rate, but you sound a little bit more okay with the tightening on the balance sheet side.
I'm a little more okay on that because I think the effects will probably be small, especially if it's well in advance of actual implementation. And so there, think about two dates. One date is when we announce what we're going to do. The second date is when implementation is actually going to take effect. If there's a meaningful gap between that and markets have a lot of time to see what's coming, I would expect it's not going to have a huge impact on markets, not like a taper tantrum. That's what we all want to avoid. And so that, to me, is the best way to try to avoid a sudden tightening of conditions.
By leaving that, sorry, I wasn't totally sure. The best way to avoid tightening of financial conditions is to defer a rate hike until after you've put that plan out there. Is that what you just said, or did I?
I said the best thing we can do is put a meaningful time between the announcement of the plan and the actual implementation of the plan.
I see, okay. But the Fed funds rate as a separate thing, how would you mix that into there?
It all depends on what the data is showing.
Okay. So you're – okay. Sounds like then – What data would make you comfortable with having the rate rise, coming up in June is the market expectation. I mean, what kind of data would make you feel comfortable with?
I'd feel more comfortable if we saw core inflation moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It does concern me that core inflation is moving in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm. Don't you feel that could be just a blip? I mean, it was moving in the right direction just until the past few months.
Could be. We'll look at the data. But again, 2% is a target. So we claim 2% is a target. If you look at how we behave as though it's a ceiling. I'm interpreting it literally as a target.
What if, this is kind of a little off topic, but there's been some sort of discussion about sort of moving the target, raising it, or changing how it's implemented. Do you feel that there's a conversation going on about this? Do you have any opinions one way or the other?
I think it's premature. Raising the inflation target is something that would be costly to households every year. We'd be paying in the form of higher inflation. And right now, we can't even hit our 2% target. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of arrogant of us to say, well, okay, we can't hit 2%, but let's go make it 3%. Who says we could then hit 3%? So, such changes are not to be taken lightly. I think one of the miracles of the past 30 years is not just that inflation expectations were anchored, it's what a powerful positive effect that has had on U.S. economic competitiveness. So it's not something to be adjusted lightly, in my view.
Could you give us a little bit more about the balance sheet? I mean, from your point of view, what what makes sense pairing both MBS and Treasury at the same time? Is it a phased in thing? Does it accelerate? Tapering the reinvestments, does that speed up over time? What's your preferred?
I mean, honestly, those are a lot of design details that reasonable people can have different opinions on. I don't think those details matter all that much. I think what matters more is that, as I said earlier, we give the markets advance warning. We let them know when it's going to happen. They're prepared for it. Then we start. That, to me, is the most important feature of whatever we end up deciding to do, whether it's phased in or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is, it's not like we're going to sell off our portfolio. These are simply bonds, whether mortgage-backed securities or treasuries, that are maturing on schedule. So this is perfectly forecastable. The only uncertainty is the interest rate environment and the reinvestments of mortgage-backed securities or people refinancing, excuse me. that's the only uncertainty in terms of how this is going to happen. And if interest rates are on a path, whether they're the SEP path or the market path, we're not expecting some giant refinance spike. So it seems like this should be very orderly for the markets to handle.
If I remember correctly, the last statement, you said that the weakness in Q1 growth was likely to be transitory. Do you feel that way as well, or are you a little more concerned about the prospects for growth like you are for inflation?
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be transitory or not. I've learned that economists can use weather to explain whatever they like. And then they can say two conflicting things, that the same storm can have two opposite effects. And so I don't know if it's transitory or not.
And on Slack, you're not sure, say again where your thinking is. You think that there may be some more slack in the...
There may be more slack. Uh-huh. I mean, it may be that as wages... First of all, wage growth is not at concerning levels. Mm-hmm. It may be that as wages start to creep up, we're surprised that more workers choose to re-enter the labor force. Mm-hmm. It's possible. Mm-hmm. We just don't know. Mm-hmm. And again, when we look at where we are in inflation, so think about the mechanism, the logical mechanism, even if it's hard to see this in the data, of unemployment rate going down, tightening of the labor force, leading to higher wages, then leading to more inflation. That's how you would think logically the mechanism would happen. We're coming up low on inflation. Wage growth is not yet concerning. And on inflation, we have a 2% target, not a ceiling. So it seems like there's not much risk here. The only risk is there's some nonlinearity, and all of a sudden the Phillips curve reemerges and all of a sudden inflation spikes. I find that hard to believe given how solidly anchored inflation expectations are. It's like this giant magnet keeping things in check. If anything, inflation expectations are ticking down, not ticking up. And so that's why I'm not as concerned. But you can't prove a negative, right? I can't mm-hmm. prove there's not a ghost in that closet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, wouldn't it be prudent, though, to, you know, I mean, we're so low where rates are now. Wouldn't it be prudent to get that started before you do see a surge in inflation? I mean, although it's not... something you think is likely, it's a possibility, right?
People have been saying that for a couple of years now. And if we had adopted that approach a couple of years ago, there'd be a lot more Americans on the sidelines not working today. So there are costs to this. It's not free. This insurance that you speak of is not free.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments that I've heard for raising rates is that you want to sort of provide a little Fed funds cushion, in a sense, before you move on the balance sheet. So if you do get sort of a mini taper tantrum, you have some room. What do you make of that argument?
I don't find that compelling. That's like saying, well, we should raise rates so we can cut them if there's a recession. If you're driving down the highway and you think there might be a hill, well, you should let off the gas. That doesn't make any sense. So you can floor it if you then hit a hill. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense, right? You're better to just maintain your speed if you actually think there may be a hill approaching. So I don't find that argument compelling.
So you
have time for
one more question.
Anything about the Institute?
How's the conference going?
I think the conference is going great. We're learning how complicated these challenges are. Part of the goal of the conference was to bring a wide range of experts and perspectives, and we've certainly got that in the first day. And I think the harder part now is for us to figure out where is the Federal Reserve's best opportunity to make a contribution to these issues. And that's what we're going to hear from later on today. Some of the research directors around the Federal Reserve System talking about what they took away from this conference. And so I'm very happy with how the first day has gone, but this is just the beginning.
Any discussion or thoughts about how the focus of the conference and the Institute align with the administration's proposed budget? It seems to be a lot of cutting of safety net programs.
Well, I'll leave the administration's budget to the administration, but it's fair for you to ask.
The last panel yesterday had many thoughts about various surveys and things like this. You had talked before about looking for, you know, gaps in research. Did you notice any from what they said?
Well, one of the things was, you know, Professor Putnam talked about people's networks and trying to understand how do we measure that and can we measure that as an indicator that could have effect on different economic outcomes. And I think that my takeaway, looking at how the panelists responded to that, they found that very interesting. And there seems like there was real receptivity to incorporating some of those measurements in their own data collection. And so that was a very tangible idea that was put forward yesterday that I think could lead to changes, which is great. Hopefully the first of many.
Wasn't he essentially saying people care less about others?
I think he was tracking that over time. At the beginning, he was saying it was more of an I society than a we society. But then he also came back in the evening and talked, or in the afternoon, and talked about how important these relationships are that we have with each other, just in terms of our own health, our own wealth, and happiness. And so getting some more data around that, I think, could be very useful.
Ann or David, any more questions about the Institute conference?
Well, I mean, you mentioned it a little bit, and I know you're going to talk about it this afternoon, but, you know, all these things you talked about are very sort of long-term problems, very sort of structural. I mean, that usually seems to be outside the Fed's bailiwick. I mean, what could the Fed do you think?
I think the biggest thing we could do is to use our research capability to dispassionately analyze some of these problems and put forward solutions that the data support. And then other policymakers, whether it's Congress or state legislatures, could then decide, okay, this data makes sense. This is honest data. We can now take this forward. You know, for example, at lunch we heard from Sondra Samuels at the Northside Achievement Zone. If the Fed or other independent researchers like the Fed were to analyze her model and conclude that this is a good model that does have a positive return on investment for taxpayers, I think fiscal policymakers would find that very interesting and helpful to know. And then they could decide if that was something that they wanted to fund. But we do have a role to play in doing the research.
But is there anything you can do policy-wise on the policy front?
Well, I think, you know, Professor Spriggs talked about the potential for maybe maximum employment, maybe there's more slack than we appreciate, maybe monetary policy does have a role. I do think we need to be open-minded about that possibility and not just get scared away of ghosts that people are talking about and actually look at what is the data showing us. Is there more slack? Does it lead to slightly higher wages? And if those slightly higher wages bring more people back into the labor force, that clearly would be a good thing for society. So I think we need to be open-minded about that.
So the idea that maybe full employment is not at 4.7% or whatever, that it maybe actually be lower?
Well, you could think of it this way. Full employment might be at a certain unemployment rate and a certain wage growth level, right? At a lower wage growth level, maybe maximum employment is at a slightly higher unemployment rate. Mm-hmm. Those two things may not be completely unrelated. I don't know.
And one last question about the Institute, otherwise.
Okay, thank you.
All right,
thanks very much.